After he finished outlining his plans, Smoke took his visiting friends on a short tour of the ranch. He especially wanted them to become familiar with the terrain surrounding and near the ranch house itself. He led them through a small copse of trees off to the right, a pile of boulders less than 100 yards from the house, and along a dry creek bed that ran from the left of the house out toward the barns and corrals. Puma looked around at what Smoke had shown him and nodded as he recalled Smoke's plan of defense for the ranch.
You got a tricky mind for a young beaver, Smoke. Old Preacher'd be proud of his youngin' if he was here.
Thanks, Puma.
Smoke rode back to the ranch house, but stayed on his horse as the others dismounted.
Joey, hold on a minute. Let's you and me head on into Pueblo and have a talk with Ben to see what the latest is on Murdoch's men coming into town.
You want some company, Smoke?
No, Lewis. I'd just as soon not have anyone else in town see you. No need for Murdoch to know we have help.
Well, you ride with your guns loose, compadre. Murdoch may have some men staked out in town just waiting for a chance at your back.
Why do you think I asked Joey to ride along? Because of his good looks?
Must be that, because I can't cook worth a damn.
If you all can get some of those traps and deadfalls and such ready, I'd appreciate it. There's no telling how much time we have before Murdoch gets tired of waiting.
You got it, boss. We'll stay out here miles from civilization and women and whiskey and cards and do all the dirty work while you go into town and have some fun.
Smoke just shook his head as he and Joey rode off toward Pueblo. When they reached the city limits, Smoke and Joey both reached down and loosed the rawhide thongs on their hammers. They knew they were riding into danger. But there were always cowards and backshooters who wanted to earn reward money the easy way. Smoke intended to show them it wasn't going to be as easy as they counted on. As they progressed down Main Street, both pair of eyes were constantly searching for the furtive move, the too quickly averted face, the downcast eyes. Both also kept their eyes peeled for movement on rooftops and in darkened alleyways, both favorite spots for ambushes. They reached Tolson's office without incident and went inside. He was at his desk, poring over a stack of wanted posters and telegraph wires from other sheriffs in the surrounding states. He looked up quickly when they opened the door, his hand going automatically toward the short-barreled greener on his desk.
Whoa there, Ben. It's just us. Getting kind of jumpy.
Grab a sit-down, boys. There's coffee in the pot, but it might be a bit thick by now. It's been cooking since noon.
Any news from our friend?
There's been a steady stream of newcomers to town. Some of them pretty rough-looking characters. Couple with faces I recognized on the posters here. I sent away or run out of town. But it's getting so honest, folk won't hardly go into the saloon at all now. And I stay away unless I got at least two deputies with me.
It's getting that bad, Ben?
Oh, it's okay, I guess. The obvious gun hawks, the real ones with some experience, know not to make trouble in town. It's the others that are getting out of hand.
You mean the young punks with the ivory-handled pistols with notches cut in the handles and an attitude like a dog with a sore paw?
Or the ones who walk around town picking fights with store clerks and farmers, acting mean and nasty so everyone will know they're tough?
I can see you both have had some experience with these idiots. Half the time, I don't know whether to laugh or just beat the shit out of the little snots.
Well, you can't afford to take them too lightly, Ben. Remember, a slug from an idiot will make you just as dead as one from an expert. Now, over the years, my notoriety has caused me to have to face down dozens of these young punks. I tried my best not to kill them. They're usually too stupid to take a chance to live if you give it to them.
Ben, you've been working too hard. How about if Joey and I take you to the saloon for a couple of drinks, then over to the hotel for a steak about 2 inches thick?
You want to check out the saloon and see what riffraff is there now, don't you?
Sure. Sometimes a little show of force will save lives in the long run.
Tolson got his hat and greener and walked with Smoke and Joey down the street to the saloon. As they approached, two men with unshaven faces and wrinkled, dirty clothes threw their cigarettes down and stepped into the saloon ahead of them.
Uh-oh. We may have trouble.
Why?
Those two men ducked into the saloon when they saw us coming. Now, they may just want a front seat for the action, Or they may be getting set to hit us as we come through the front door, before our eyes adjust to the lights inside.
Ben, why don't you and your greener hurry up on ahead of us and slip in the back door to the place? Give a whistle if we need to come in with our hands full of iron.
Ben nodded and jogged on ahead of the pair of gunfighters, who continued to saunter down the street as if they didn't have a care in the world. At the bat wings, they paused, but hearing no whistle, they pushed through and in. The saloon was crowded, men standing elbow to elbow at the bar, and almost every seat at every table was taken. Smoke saw Tolson in the rear of the room next to a post. He spread his arms and shrugged. He hadn't seen anything suspicious. Smoke glanced at the second-story balcony, but there was no one there, and all the doors he could see were shut. They would have ample warning if someone tried to step out of a door and shoot him from above. Suddenly, two men rose up from behind the piano with guns in their hands. Before the two could pull triggers, both Joey's and Smoke's hands were full of iron. Joey looked around at the other men in the saloon, then nudged Smoke with his elbow.
Would you look at that, Smoke?
Smoke followed his gaze to a group of men at a table across the room. They were all wearing what they evidently thought rough and tough gunfighters ought to wear. Fancy silk shirts in black and red, shiny boots with elaborate engraved designs in the leather, and double holster rigs with pearl-handled or fancy-carved butts on their pistols. A couple even had silver belt buckles and conchos on their hat bands.
They look more like San Francisco pimps than gunmen.
You know, Smoke, over the years I met quite a few of the best shooters in the country, and ain't one of them ever dressed like that.
One of the men at the table, so young the mustache he was trying to grow looked like it had been chewed on by a rat, stood up.
You didn't see something you think is funny?
And who might you be, young man?
I'm the San Francisco Kid.
The kid went for his gun, and Joey cut him down.
Anyone else want to be the San Francisco Kid? Now, I know I'm talking to some of the dumbest sons of bitches that were ever birthed by whores they call mama, but I want you to pull your pards' dicks out your ears and listen to me real damn good. I tell all of you, get the word to Murdoch. Next time I see him, I'm gonna dust him through and through, whether he's healed or not. There won't be any talking or jawing, but the lead is damn sure gonna fly. Let him know!
Afterward, Joey and Smoke rode out of town at an easy canter, in no great hurry. As they rode, Smoke cut his eyes over at Red, Joey's big roan stallion.
That Red is some animal, Joey.
Yeah, he is. He ain't never let me down. We've been in some pretty tough spots together. He's outrun and outlasted every kind of animal, from Indian ponies to thoroughbred Morgans from England. Long as he gets his grain, he'll run till I tell him to stop or his heart bursts, whichever comes first.
Same with horse here. He's bred out of an old Palooza preacher gate me name of Seven. But he's got more bottom than most Palooza ponies, and an easier gait for long riding.
Yeah, he looks to be a mighty fine piece of horse flesh.
When this is over, if we're still upright, how about you let me breed a couple of Palooza mares I've got back at Sugarloaf to Red? Might make some interesting colts.
Only if you let me take one or two back to Texas with me.
Deal, if you go back to Texas.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, I thought when Betty and Tom are healed enough to travel, we might just bring them up here and let them take a look at Colorado. After all, I already have one ranch, and someone's gonna have to run the Rocking G after I leave. I figured you'd be the logical one for that job, if you're interested.
This wouldn't be in the way of charity, would it?
Hell no. Remember, we're all part owners of the ranch, in it together. I'm going to expect a good return on my money, and you'll earn everything you make, believe me.
I'll think on it, Smoke. I surely will. It's a mighty pretty country. One God has smiled on, I think.
They were about halfway to the Rockin' Sea, with heavy timber on either side of the trail, when Joey cocked his head.
Smoke, look up yonder, about 100 yards or so on top of that small hillock. for some boulders and such. And I just caught a glimpse of something shiny up there, like moonlight reflecting off a gun barrel.
Smoke cut his eyes northward. He couldn't see anything amiss.
Tell you what, Joey. Those clouds are gonna cover the moon in a minute. When it gets dark, turn red into the timber. I'll follow. Then we can engine up on whoever it is up there waiting for us.
You got it, partner.
5 minutes later, the moon disappeared behind the clouds, and the two men pulled their mounts into the forest on the left side of the trail. They stepped out of their saddles and crouched behind a large stand of pines. Without a word, both men knelt in the sandy loam and smeared the dark dirt over their faces and hands to hide their white skin. Then, simultaneously, they pulled their knives from scabbards and took off at a trot through the woods toward a small rise ahead. At the foot of the hill, Smoke waved Joey to the left and he slipped to the right. Slowing to a careful walk, Smoke inched up the rising ground. He crouched at the base of a series of boulders and listened. Smoke put his back to the rock and eased around it to find four men kneeling with rifles aimed at the trail below.
They ought to be out of those trees by now. What the hell are they doing taking so long?
You think they saw us, Jesse?
Nah, they couldn't see this far tonight, even with the moon.
I don't know. Shit, this is crazy. I'm out of here.
Smoke saw Joey's face appear at the other side of the small clearing, and he nodded at him. Yeah. As the man stood and turned to leave, found himself face to face with a huge shape with a blackened visage.
Too late, partner.
Jesse looked back over his shoulder.
Willie?
Smoke stepped toward him, holding his blood-smeared knife in front of him.
Willie's dead, and you're next.
You!
Yep, me.
One of the others pointed his rifle at Smoke. The smoke in the moonlight, the hole in the end of the Winchester barrel looked big enough to fall into. Joey took him out. The final man aimed his rifle and pulled repeatedly on the trigger. Joey stepped to him and hit him flush in the mouth with a balled-up fist.
You gotta cock it first, dumbass.
Thanks, Joey.
Better late than never, I guess.
I'd say you were right on time, partner.
Smoke bent and effortlessly picked up the unconscious man off the ground and slung him over his shoulder.
Let's find their horses. We'll take them and this hombre back with us to the ranch.
Joey and Smoke passed two sentries at the edge of his property and waved as they rode on by.
Good to see the boys are taking this seriously.
Yeah, wouldn't do for us to be caught napping when Murdoch sends his men to call.
As they approached the ranch house, Smoke and Joey saw a large campfire built about 20 yards from the house.
What the hell?
Yeah, that's probably Puma. He never could abide sleeping indoors unless there was a blizzard howling. And then he'd just bitch about feeling closed in.
Sure enough, Puma was sitting cross-legged in front of the fire. Cal and Pearly sprawled on the ground in front of him, no doubt listening raptly to his tall tales of the good old days. Lewis Longmont and Monty Carson had carried chairs from inside the house and were sitting there too, listening and drinking coffee. When Lewis saw Smoke and Joey arrive, he inclined his head toward Puma and rolled his eyes, grinning. Puma was telling the boys about the time Smoke had called 20 old mountain men in from the High Lonesome to help him deal with Tilden Franklin and his bunch of hired killers.
You should have seen it, boys. Some of these coots are pushing 80 or more. They was spoiling for one more fight. Didn't none of them want to die in bed. Only fitting way for a mountain man to die is with his guns blazing in a hail of lead. Anyway, here's at least 20 of the wildest, rootinest, tootinest old beavers that ever forded a mountain stream, all gathered together to give Preacher's Boy a hand. There's Charlie Starr, Luke Nations, Pistol LaRue, Bill Foley, Dan Greentree, Leo Wood, Carrie Webb, Sunset Hatfield, Crooked John Simmons, Bull Flagler, Toot Tuner, Sutter Cordova, Red Shingletown. Give me some time, I'll name some more.
He's telling the truth, Cal. I was there for that fracas.
Oh, I know. I already heard this story.
Well, I'll be damned. That's what happens when you get old, can't remember what you done said and ain't said. Be shame to waste words telling folks something they'd already heard before.
Unless you was getting paid for it.
Smoke stepped out of his saddle and pulled on his dally rope, bringing the horse with the unconscious ambusher forward. They had slung him over the saddle and tied his hands to his feet under the bronc's belly. Joey cut him down and rolled him over onto his back in the dirt.
Jesus! What happened to his face? A mule kick him?
Nah, it was just Joey's fist.
Andre, some coffee for Smoke and Joey, please. You two look like you've had an eventful ride back from town.
Eh, you could say that. Imani, would you see if you can slap that galoot conscious while Joey and I wash up? Then we'll see if he can give us any useful information about the size of Murdoch's new gang.
Smoke's friends were arranged around the campfire when he and Joey finished washing the outlaw's blood off their faces and hands and changed clothes. Smoke walked outside to stand over the man whose face Joey had smashed. He was conscious, tied hand and foot, and he was squirming on the ground, looking around at the unfriendly faces surrounding him.
What's your name, cowboy?
Moses. Moses Jackson.
You want to tell me why you and your friends were out there waiting to bushwhack Joey and me?
We weren't gonna kill you, we was just gonna...
Just gonna sit there, guns cocked and aimed, waiting to blow us to hell.
Did Murdoch send you out to do us in?
I ain't saying anything else. Go on and get the sheriff and have him take me to jail.
So that bastard Sam Murdoch can let you escape? I don't think we'll send for him just yet.
Puma Buck, his eyes feral and reflected firelight, stepped up to stand practically on top of the young man.
If he's not gonna talk, Smoke, let me skin him. I ain't skinned nobody for 2, maybe 3 years now, but I'm damned if I've forgotten how to get the job done.
You can't let that old coot near me. I know my rights.
You got a right to die, boy, that's all. The manner of your death is all we gotta decide now. Personally, as the galoot you was fixing to backshoot, I kinda like the idea of letting old Puma have his way with you. Especially since you don't seem inclined to tell us nothing anyhow.
Monty leaned over the wounded man then, eyes squinted and mean.
Skinning's too good for him. Let's just scalp him, cut off his ears, send him back to Murdoch. I'm sure they'll welcome him with open arms.
You can't do that! Vasquez will chop me to bits if you send me back. Just let me go, and I'll ride out of Colorado, and you never see me again.
Cowboy, you're a confessed killer and backshooter. Now why would I let you ride off to hire out your gun and murder somebody else?
I swear, I'll put my guns up and never ever shoot anybody again.
Puma slipped his knife against Moses' chest and cut his shirt buttons off with a gentle movement.
Looks like my old blade is a mite rusty and dull. That'll make skinning him awful tough. I might even have to take a rest in the middle of a job before I'm done and get back to it later.
No, no, please.
Then tell us what you know about Murdoch's plans. How many men has he when he plans to hit us? And who's he got riding with him?
If I'll tell you what I know, will you let me go?
If what you have to say helps us, then I'll promise you we won't kill you. But if I let you ride out of here in one piece, and I ever see you wearing a gun again, I swear I'll shoot you down without a second thought. Deal?
Yeah, sure. Murdoch's got at least 40 or 50 men out at his ranch now, and more may be on the way. I guess the chance to make a name by killing you and Mr. Wells has attracted a whole bunch of hard men.
Having a chance to do it don't always get it done, son.
Well, Murdoch don't let the hired hands in on his plans, but I figure from the way he's talking, he is going to send his men out here to the ranch if he can't get you any other way. He's mighty pissed about you gunning down his brother.
Any idea when he plans to call the raid?
Well, like I said, I'm way down on the totem pole, and he don't confide in me. But he did mention he was afraid if he waited overly long, the U.S. Marshals would be called in. And he sure don't want that to happen.
You know any names of the gents riding with him?
Lord, you want me to name them all?
As many as you can remember.
Smoke nodded at Lewis, who took a small tablet from his coat pocket and a silver-encased pencil to write the names down with.
Well, there's a group of about 8 or 10 who said they owed you from when they went up in the mountains after you a couple of years ago. They kind of hang together, always talking about how badly you treat them. A couple of them have some awful scars on their faces where they said you beat the shit out of them.
That'd be the men riding with Curly Rogers. Dewey and Boots are the ones wearing scars on their faces from the last time I had a talk with them. Horton, Max, Gates, Gooden, and Art South are the others I suspect have come to get their revenge after they failed to get the bounty on me during the Lee Slater mix-up. Continue, Moses.
There's a handful of half-breeds. Jake Sixkiller, Sam Silverwolf, and Jed Beartooth. They hang with a couple of Mexes, name of Felix Salazar and Juan Jimenez. You said you boys killed some Kinnadares at the hotel in town the other night.
Go on.
Then there's some real bad hombres. Those with a reputation already who aim to make their place in history, so they say. The Silverado Kid, Black Jack Morton, Bill Denver, One-Eyed Jackson, and Slim Watkins. I think even Murdoch and Vasquez are afraid of those gunmen.
Moses inclined his head toward Puma.
There's even one like him. A man dressed all in buckskins and fur who looks older than dirt, with long, shaggy gray hair and beard. He says he's a mountain man named Beaver Pelt Solomon, and he wants a chance to kill some other man's kid, a man named a Preacher.
That old bastard! He once stole some beaver pelts from Preacher. Preacher beat the shit out of him and hung that moniker on him to let everyone know he was a thieving son of a bitch. It worked, too. Wouldn't nobody have nothing to do with him after that. The high lonesome can get mighty lonesome if even your so-called friends won't palaver with you once in a while. And Beaver Pelt wasn't welcome in anybody else's camp after Preacher put the word out on him.
Any others?
Let me see. Shotgun Sam Willoughby and Gimpy Monroe. They're kind of old, too. But they still know how to draw and fire. They hear them tell it they was killing people back in the Gold Rush days of 48. The other day, a couple of the younger ones made a mistake of calling them old farts. They blowed them to hell without even breaking a sweat. Then they put ropes on the bodies and dragged them out in the pasture for coyotes and wolves to eat.
That about it?
Well, hell no, there's a passel more. But not any other big names, just a bunch of men like me. Trying to make a living the only way they know, from hiring out their guns. A group of men who fought down in New Mexico and Arizona during the time of the Lincoln County War. Pretty hard old boys, I suspect, but they keep to themselves and aren't much for bragging or fighting with the others. Oh, there's one other man. Wears an old Union Army uniform coat. Carries a sword on his belt. Says his name's Colonel Waters, and he has a debt to pay to Joey Wells.
He was with the Redlegs who killed my men. He's the only one I couldn't track down. I was told he changed his name and moved back east to get away from me. I guess he got tired of running and is ready to face his maker, and I intend to oblige him.
That all you can tell us, Moses?
That's all I know, Mr. Jensen, honest.
Put him on his horse, boys, but keep his guns and ammunition.
As Cal untied Moses, Smoke put his hand on his shoulder and stared into his eyes.
Just making sure I remember your face, son, because if I ever see it again, you're a dead man. Now get out of my sight.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Thank you.
Smoke's a generous man, Moses. Don't you ever forget how close you came to tasting my steel. Boys, this doesn't sound at all good.
Murdoch sure got himself some prize shooters, that's for sure.
I've heard of some of them. The Silverado Kid and Blackjack Morton got run out of Tombstone a year or so ago. Evidently, they were too mean for even that hellhole.
Yeah, said they killed women and kids, anybody who angered them. And they was easy to anger.
That bunch riding with Curly Rogers are mean, and they won't hesitate to backshoot a man. But they're not overly endowed with either courage or intelligence. Bill Denver and Slim Watkins made their name in the mining country of North Colorado and New Mexico. There's paper out on them for robbing stages, trains, and miners. They killed without warning and without provocation, according to the newspaper accounts. They have ropes waiting for them in more than 20 towns I know of.
I ain't heard of but two of the half-breeds, Sam Silverwolf and Jed Beartooth, and they're both wanted in Arizona. Seems they like to rape women to death. Mostly Indian women, or they wouldn't be alive to give us grief. I never read nor heard anything of Jake Sixkiller.
I have. Ned Buntline wrote a piece about him a few months ago in one of my dime novels. Sixkiller likes to use a shotgun loaded with nails and rocks and stuff, and then if anybody's still alive, he scalps them. Buntline said he stayed mostly in California, but I guess he came east to get away from his reputation out there.
But what about Beaver Pelt, Puma? He anything special to worry about?
Not if you're armed and facing him. He's a sneak and a coward, but he's supposed to be pretty good with an old Sharps 52 he carries. He's the only one we have to worry about doing us any damage from a distance. Let me take care of that old buzzard. Be my pleasure to finish what Preacher started years ago.
I got an idea.
About time, boss. What's on your mind?
What's the last thing a commander with an overwhelming superiority in numbers and firepower expects the opposing army to do?
Attack.
How about we even up our odds a little?
You can't mean we're gonna ride against Murdoch and 50 men. That'd be suicide. They'd cut us down like autumn wheat.
Well, the frontal assault's not exactly what I had in mind. Sally brought some books back from her last trip out east to visit her parents. They were about some Japanese fighters called ninjas.
What in the hell are ninjas?
Individuals who swore allegiance to the warlords of feudal Japan, the Shogun.
I thought people who swore allegiance to warlords of Japan were called samurai.
Don't interrupt your elders, Cal. Ninja were called invisible killers because they dressed all in black, attacked at night, and killed without being seen or heard, using their hands and short swords called katana on their victims.
Exactly. We're about to become American ninjas. Here's what we're gonna do. Joey, Puma, and me will infiltrate Murdoch's compound. Lewis, you and Monty and Cal and Pearlie are gonna stay back a couple of miles from Murdoch's ranch house to hold our horses and give us cover in case we have to make tracks out of there in a hurry. If they come chasing us, they'll ride right into your bullets without expecting an ambush.
How come you and Joey and Puma get to have all the fun while the rest of us stay on the outskirts of the action?
Cuz, you're a young pup. Joey learned how to sneak around enemy camps in the war. Smoke and I learned how to engine up on people from the best teachers there is, mountain men.
Yeah, Puma's right, Lewis. I know you're not afraid of the devil himself, and you're a hell of a shootist in a gunfight. In fact, there isn't a man I'd rather have on my right hand in a fracas than you. But this is different. One mistake, one inadvertent noise, one slip-up, and you not only get yourself killed, but all of us. That's why I'm leaving you to the job you can do best, protecting our backs with your guns.
All right. You don't have to shine me on. I agree I haven't your experience in sneaking around at night and being quiet like a ninja, but at the first sound of gunfire, I'm not waiting to see if you come out of there. I'm coming in after you.
Me too.
Fair enough. That's okay with the rest of you? Cal? Pearlie?
Yes, sir. But I feel like Mr. Longmont. I'd rather be with you when you go in.
I know you would, Cal. But this doesn't mean you're going to miss out on the action. Believe me, after we stir up this hornet's nest, there'll be enough fighting for all of us.
Smoke went into the cabin and came out with a can of boot black.
Here, all of you smear this over any skin showing. Also, I want you to take off anything that sparkles or makes noise. Don't wear any spurs or metal that can clink or make a sound. Joey, I've got an extra pair of moccasins you can wear when we sneak into their camp.
What about us? Why do we have to blacken our faces if we're not going to be near the ranch house?
All of us need to do this. When there's a potential for a night fight, it never hurts to be prepared. Remember, they can't hit what they can't see. And remember how sound carries over open ground. Pearlie, you have that burlap sack I asked you to get for me?
Yep.
Did you do what I asked you to do?
Yeah, I did it. But boss, I gotta tell you, I thought you was crazy.
You see why now?
I think so. I sure am glad I'm on your side.
Pearlie went over to the barn and returned a moment later with a large burlap sack with a cord tying off its opening. The bag had a lump in the bottom that writhed and moved on its own.
That what I think it is?
Yeah.
He's going to be dancing at Murdoch's place tonight.
Remember, the object tonight isn't a high body count. The object is to spread fear. A scared man will frighten others. His fear spreading like a plague. A dead man is just dead.
Of course, a dead man can't shoot you neither.
Smoke signaled his riders to a halt on a crest of a small rise about 2 miles from Murdoch's ranch house. It was a measure of Murdoch's overconfidence in his superior numbers that he hadn't bothered to post guards. Smoke put his field glasses to his eyes and swept the area for a moment.
I don't see anything between us and the ranch house. There's no sign of dogs or sentries.
I guess he figures those desperados will protect him from harm. Well, we'll see about that shortly.
Smoke, Joey, and Puma dismounted, handing their reins to Lewis and Monty, while Cal and Pearly found some low rocks on the hillock to get behind. The trio took off toward Murdoch's at a fast walk, estimating it would take them about 20 minutes to cover the 2 miles, being careful not to make any noise. Luckily, fall skies were full of low-hanging storm clouds, and the moon was already set for the night, so there was no light to give them away. Murdoch had 2 large corrals on the far side of his house, and both were full of mounts. Joey estimated there to be at least 50 horses, maybe more. The area around the house was quiet, and the bunkhouse was off on the other side of the corrals, almost 200 yards from the ranch house. Smoke pointed to an area nearer the house, where there were several groups of widely spaced campfires burned down to glowing embers.
The regular punchers are probably in the bunkhouse. I think the gunhawks are around the fires, sleeping outside.
I count 12 camps. There must be over 60 men down there.
That means either Moses was lying or more men have joined up in the last day or so.
Smoke nodded at Joey and motioned to the group of camps on the left with an outstretched arm. He touched Puma and pointed to the right. Then, as they eased off, Smoke took the middle collection of sleepers. Smoke walked slowly, crouching over so as not to highlight himself against the horizon. When he came to the closest of the sleeping outlaws, he put his sack down, placed his hand over the man's mouth, and sliced the blade of his bowie knife quickly across his throat. Smoke then made an incision around his head and pulled the killer's scalp free from his skull. Then he stepped to the next man and gently wrapped a rawhide thong around his boots, tying them together. A few feet farther on, he slipped a man's gun out of his holster, flipped open the loading gate, and emptied his shells in the dirt next to the fire, close to red-hot coals. Crawling on to the next slumbering form, Smoke slid his belt and pants button with his bowie knife. At the end of this group of men, Smoke opened the end of his sack and shook out one of its inhabitants, and then quickly walked to the next camp 15 yards away to repeat his actions. Puma was overjoyed to find in his second group the mountain man known as Beaver Pelt Solomon. He didn't want the thief and killer to die without knowing who did it, though, so Puma grabbed his mouth and pricked him lightly under the chin with the point of a skinning knife.
Preacher and Smoke send their regards.
Not content with merely scalping the traitor to the mountain men, Puma also slit his pants open and cut off his genitals, sticking them in his mouth to protrude obscenely from his beard. Puma, like Smoke, unloaded many of the sleeping men's weapons and sprinkled bullets near the red-hot embers, knowing it wouldn't be too long before they heated up enough to explode, sending slugs of lead flying everywhere. Joey did not scalp his last victim. After he was dead, he put his Arkansas toothpick behind the man's neck and jerked quickly upward. The razor-sharp blade sliced through skin, vertebrae, and windpipe, severing the head from its body. Joey found a long stick next to the fire and impaled the head on it, its lifeless eyes looking nowhere. He stuck the other end in the dirt to stand like a sentinel next to the man's headless body. When Joey and Puma were through, Smoke went silently among all the camps, depositing some of his burlap sack cargo in each one. The trio quickly walked for 50 yards, then stopped. They turned their backs to the camp so their light wouldn't be seen. Holding out the red-hot tips, they all lit fuses to bundles of dynamite and lobbed them into the camps, using the ones with the longer fuses first and the shorter fuses last. After they had thrown all they had, the 3 men began to jog away at a ground-eating pace toward the rise where their friends waited. In the camps, the men continued to sleep on peacefully for what was going to be the last remaining seconds of their lives. Johnny Blackman jumped to his feet and started to run as dynamite went off behind him. took one step and his tied-together feet locked. As he rolled away, red-hot bullet casings near the fire exploded, sending molten chunks of lead into Johnny's body in three places, killing him where he lay. Willie Clayton rolled over at the first blast of dynamite and covered his head with his hands. As the echoes of the blast died down, he looked up and straight into the dead eyes of a head on a stick staring sightless down at him. Jake Sixkiller's life ended when a packet of dynamite thrown by Joey landed 2 feet from his sleeping form. Dewey, the man whose face Smoke had caved in and ruined, scrambled on his hands and knees until he was up against a tree, which he hugged for dear life. Something crawled across his leg. Terrified, Dewey brushed it away with his hand. He felt a sharp stinging in his palm and jerked it back. The rattler, whose fangs were embedded in his hand, came with it, flying through the air to wrap around Dewey's neck, where it again sank its fangs directly into his jugular vein. Vasquez and Murdoch eventually got their men to calm down and stop shooting each other. Torches and lanterns were lit, and they began to try to make some sense of what the hell had happened. Murdoch stood with his hands on his hips, looking around at the mess and at the dead, dying, and wounded desperados he had hired.
God damn that Jensen and Wells! Just look at what they done!
Senor, try to calm yourself. It is over for now.
But how, man? But when?
I told you we should have guards posted. Those hombres are local. They do not know fear.
But I got 60 men here! Who would try to attack them when they're so outnumbered?
You don't have 60 men anymore, senor. Maybe half.
There's another 15 coming in the next few days. We'll just have to wait for them to get here. And I'm gonna make those bastards pay for this.
I wonder why they didn't kill more men.
What do you call that?
They were here among us. They could kill many more if they want.
They killed enough and wounded plenty more. Now I'm gonna have to put off killing them until I get some reinforcements, and some of these men need time to heal.
Only when the sun came up did Murdoch realize just how badly his men had been demoralized. After the wounded were carried inside and attended to, and the dead stacked in a row behind the house, another 7 men packed up their gear and prepared to ride off. Murdoch and Vasquez stood before the men as they sat on their horses.
Why are you men leaving? We'll have plenty more gun hands in a couple of days, and then we'll take out Jensen and Wells and their entire force.
Mr. Murdoch, you don't understand what happened last night. The man lying next to me was gutted and scalped, and my gun was emptied and put back in my holster. They could have just slit all our throats and we'd never have known what hit us. They were sending us a message. They was telling us they're not afraid of us, and they can kill us anytime they want to. And I, for one, believe them. Your money's no good to a dead man, Mr. Murdoch. I'll see you around. Maybe.
The 7 men galloped off straight west to avoid both Pueblo and Smoke Jensen's ranch.
God damn it! I want to kill that Smoke Jensen and Joey Wills so bad I can taste it! I knew there were going to be trouble the minute I laid eyes on them.
You know, Senor Murdoch, I think you were right when you told Emilio that Wells will never rest until he kill me. I think I'm plenty glad we have more men coming soon.
I wish they were already here. If they don't get here in the next day or two, I'm afraid more of our men will leave. This raid has spooked them, Emilio. I want you to watch the men real close. If any more of them start talking about leaving, you gotta stop them quick and make an example of them. You understand what I'm saying?
Si, senor. We must make them understand they are to be more afraid of me than of the gringos, Wells, or Jensen.
Exactly. You put a bridle on your men for a week or two. Let the dust settle a bit. Then we'll deal with Mr. Jensen and Mr. Wells once and for all.
Over the next few days, Joey drilled the punchers they had hired unmercifully, trying to teach them in a short while what it had taken him years to learn about guerrilla warfare. And soon, he began to seem less grim and even smiled occasionally.
Smoke, I never would have believed it, but them boys are making real progress. Well, they ain't ever going to be pistoliers, but at least they ain't going to shoot themselves in the foot if somebody draws on them.
That's because they have a good teacher, Joey. You're the best man with a shotgun I've ever seen.
I don't know about that. But every one of these boys has got some hair. I wish I'd had him riding with me against those Kansas Redlegs.
Yeah, I heard you did all right by yourself, Joey.
Joey shrugged, smiled, and headed out to drill the hand some more. After he left, Smoke and his friends got busy setting up the defenses around the ranch house he had planned against the raid they all knew was coming. Puma Buck, who was not one to sit around and wait for trouble, took off alone to roam the hills and woods surrounding Murdoch's ranch. He would alert Smoke to any movements there, signaling preparations for an attack. When all his preparations were made, Smoke dynamited the rocks above the river running through his ranch, blocking its flow down to Murdoch's spread. Within 2 days, Murdoch and Ben Tolson rode out to the ranch house. Smoke told Lewis and Monte Carson to stay out of sight and walked out to meet the two riders.
Howdy, Ben. What can I do for you?
Mr. Murdoch here has lodged a complaint against you, Smoke. He says you've blocked off the water to his ranch.
Oh? And if I have, Ben, is that against the law?
Jensen, you son of a bitch, I know my rights. That riverbed runs through my place, and I got the right to use any water in it to feed my herd.
Why, I reckon you're correct, Mr. Murdoch, and you're certainly welcome to use any water that comes onto your property. Trouble is, the river must have eroded the walls of a canyon where it comes through my spread. Seems some boulders fell and dammed up the river. I don't see how I can be held accountable for forces of nature.
Sheriff, that ain't all. The other night, they came onto my place and killed and wounded a bunch of my hands. I want them arrested for murder.
Oh, I sure hate to hear that your cowhands got shot up, Murdoch. Did anyone actually see who did it?
You know we didn't, Jensen. The murdering bastards attacked us at night while we were sleeping.
Well, if you didn't see the men who attacked you, I don't see how you can blame it on me. Maybe it was some of those Mexican and Indian gunslingers who rode on the town last week, coming back to haunt you.
Bullshit! I knew it was you! You shot up my men, now you're trying to kill my cattle by cutting off my water!
Your cattle? Way I heard, Murdoch, there's some doubt about just whose cattle those are on your spread. Maybe we could have the sheriff and some of the other ranchers around here ride on over and take a close look at your brands. Just to make sure none of them have been altered. And while we're at it, we could also take a look at those cowboys that got killed and see if they're real punchers or gun hawks who got what they deserved.
Hold up there, Mr. Murdoch. I don't fancy hauling your body all the way back into Pueblo draped across your horse.
You haven't seen the last of me, Jensen.
Ben, why don't you come on in for a cup of coffee before you head back to town? There's an old friend of yours wants to say hello.
I wouldn't underestimate that man, Smoke. He may be full of hot air, but he's had some mean old boys come riding through Pueblo heading for his ranch the last couple of days.
Smoke walked Tolson back to the house.
Well, I got some hard men with me too, Ben.
When he entered the room, Ben's eyes lit up and he broke into a huge grin.
Monte Carson, you old son of a bitch! What are you doing up here?
Hell, I figured it'd been way too long since I'd had a palaver with my old sidekick. When I heard my friend Smoke might be in need of help, I thought I could stand a little time off from sheriffing.
Oh, well, it sure is nice to see you, partner. Been a long time since I had anybody interesting to swap lies with.
Andre appeared in the door to the kitchen.
Monsieur Tolson, would you care to join the other gentlemen for breakfast?
Well, sure. Long as Carson here didn't do none of the cooking. As I recollect, his biscuits and fatback weren't fit for man nor beast.
As they walked into the dining room, Monty introduced Lewis and Andre to Tolson.
Longmont? I seem to remember Longmont ran a saloon in Silver City a while back. That you?
Yes, sir. I had a small establishment there for a while, until the mines began to play out.
Back then, I was riding with Curly Bill Bodacious, and he told me you pulled up stakes after a fracas involving one of the city officials.
The mayor's son, actually. He was a headstrong, spoiled young man with an excess of money and a paucity of brains. He fancied the favors of a young lady named Lily Montez. She was a beauty. Long, shiny black hair, pretty face and complexion. and legs that went all the way up. Evidently, she and young Boyd had a lover's quarrel, and she decided to make him jealous. She began to hang around my place, trying to interest me in her more obvious charms. About the only ladies I was interested in then were the four that reside on a deck of cards, so I declined her offer of companionship.
That's the first time I ever heard you turning down a lady.
Well, I was younger then, and intent on making my fortune. Anyway, Lily complained to Boyd I had insulted her honor, and he felt compelled to call me out.
Lewis went into a long and detailed accounting of what happened that fateful day. He was every bit the storyteller that he was the gunman, and when it was done, all the other men sat back astonished.
Gosh, Mr. Longmont, that must have been something to see.
Well, Cal, gunfights are always more fun to watch than to participate in.
That's for damn sure.
Puma Buck walked his horse slowly through underbrush and light forest timber in the foothills surrounding Murdoch's spread. His mount was one they'd hired in Pueblo on arriving, and it wasn't as sure-footed on the steep slopes as his paint pony back home was, so he was taking it easy and getting the feel of his new ride. He kept a sharp lookout toward Murdoch's ranch house, almost a quarter of a mile below. He was going to make damn sure none of those Buscaderos managed to get the drop on Smoke and his other new friends. He rode with a Sharps 52 caliber laid across his saddle horn, loaded and ready for immediate action. Several times Puma had seen men ride up to the ranch house and enter, only to leave after a while, riding off toward herds of cattle, which could be seen on the horizon. Puma figured they were most likely the legitimate punchers Murdoch had working his cattle, and not gun hawks he'd hired to take down Smoke and Joey. Let's face it, a shootist would rather take lead poisoning than lower himself to herd beeves. Off to the side, Puma could barely make out the riverbed that ran through Murdoch's place. It was pure dry now. He could see on the other side of Murdoch's ranch house a row of freshly dug graves. He grinned to himself, appreciating the graves, some of them his doing, and the way Smoke had deprived the man of water for his cattle and horses. Puma knew that that alone would prompt Murdoch to make his move soon. He couldn't afford to wait and let his stock die of thirst now, could he? Puma pulled his canteen out and uncorked the top, ready to take a swig. When suddenly, he saw a band of 15 or more riders burning dust toward the ranch house from the direction of Pueblo. Evidently, they were additional men Murdoch had hired to replace those he and Smoke and Joey had slain in their midnight raid.
Bet those banditos are fixing to put on the war paint and make a run over to Smoke's place.
Puma swung out of his saddle and crouched down behind a fallen tree, propping the big, heavy Sharps across the rough bark. He licked his fingers and wiped the front sight with it to make it stand out more when he needed it. He got himself into a comfortable position, and he laid out a box full of extra shells next to the gun on the tree within easy reach. He figured he might need to do some quick reloading when the time came. After about 10 minutes, the gang of men Puma was observing arrived at the front of the ranch house, and two figures Puma took to be Murdoch and Vasquez came out of the door to address him. He couldn't make out their faces at the distance, but they had an unmistakable air of authority about them. As the rancher began to talk, waving his hands towards Smoke's ranch, Puma took careful aim, remembering he was shooting downhill and needed to lower his sights a bit, the natural tendency being to overshoot a target lower than you are. The targets were a little over 1,500 yards from Puma, a long range even for the remarkable Sharps. It seemed like a long time, but it was only a little over 5 seconds before one of the men on horseback was thrown from his mount to lie sprawled in the dirt.
Got him.
By the time the group knew they were being fired upon, two of their number were dead on the ground.
Another down.
The outlaws began to scatter, some jumping from their horses and running into the house, while others just bent over their saddle horns and burned trail dust away from the area. A couple of brave souls aimed rifles up the hill and fired, but the range was so far for ordinary rifles that Puma never even saw where the bullets landed.
Night-night.
Puma figured he'd done enough for the time being. Now he had to get back to Smoke and tell him Murdoch was ready to make his play, or would be, as soon as he rounded up the men Puma had scattered all over the countryside. Several of the riders had ridden towards Smoke's ranch already and were now between Puma and his home. He packed his sharps in his saddle boot and opened his saddle bags. He withdrew two Colt Army 44s to match the one in his holster and made sure they were all loaded up 6 and 6. Then he stuffed the two extras in his belt. He tugged his hat down tight and eased up into the saddle. Riding slow and careful, he kept the heavy timber until he came to a group of 6 men standing next to a drying riverbed, watering their horses in one of the small pools remaining. There was no way to avoid them.
Oh, hell. This should be fun.
Two of the gun slicks went down immediately, 44 slugs in their chests. Another jumped into the saddle, turned tail, and rode like hell to get away from this madman who was bent on killing them all. Another took careful aim and fired. His bullet tore through Puma's left shoulder muscle. Puma straightened, gritting his teeth on the leather reins while he continued firing with his right-hand gun. One-Eyed Jackson fired his final bullet, which ripped into Puma's horse's forehead. It exited out the back of its skull, only to plow into Puma's chest. One-Eyed Jackson looked around.
God damn, that old fool had a lot of hair to charge us like that.
He walked over to Puma's body and aimed his pistol at the back of the mountain man's head.
Oh, shit. Well, you're a tough old bird, but soon as I reload, I'll put one in your eye.
Not in this lifetime, sonny.
Puma swung his right arm out from beneath his body. In it was his buffalo skin and knife. One Eye looked down at the hilt of Puma's long knife sticking out of his chest.
Oh, son of a...
Puma lay there for a moment. Then, with great effort, he pushed himself over so he faced his beloved mountains.
Boys, get the cafecito hot. I'm coming to meet you.
Smoke was sitting with his friends around the dining table as dusk approached.
Cal, where's Puma got to? He knows to be back here before dark.
I don't know, Mr. Smoke. He sat out most of the night staring at the fire and singing some old Indian song. Then this morning, he put some red and yellow and blue paint on his face and took off toward the mountains with that big old sharps of his across his saddle.
Oh, damn, Cal. Why didn't you tell me this sooner?
Why?
Because that was his death song he was singing, and that paint on his face meant he was going on the warpath. He probably intended to do as much damage to Murdoch as he could before they killed him.
Jiminy Smoke, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Smoke grabbed his hat and Henry rifle and ran out the door, everyone in the cabin following. They all loved that old man, and they weren't about to let Murdoch and his men kill him. That is, if they weren't too late already. Smoke and his 5 friends rode hard toward Murdoch's ranch, leaning over their saddle horns, grim, determined looks on their faces. It was almost an hour before they galloped up to the scene of Puma's charge. Dead bodies lay everywhere, and horses milled, grazing on the green grass near the old riverbed. Smoke jumped out of the saddle before a horse came to a stop and ran to where Puma lay, still staring at the mountain. Smoke knelt and cradled the old man's head in his lap.
Hey, partner. I kicked some butt today.
Oh, you sure did, Puma.
Don't fret now. There's been something going wrong inside me the last couple months. I didn't hanker to die in no bed.
Only fitting way for a mountain man to die is with his hands full of hard, spitting lead and laughing at death.
Poba, I'll make sure the other mountain men know of this day and sing about it around their campfires until there are none of us left.
Say goodbye to the fellas for me, Smoke. And if preacher's waiting for me on the other side, I'll tell him what a good job we did raising our boy.
Smoke started to reply, then he noticed it wasn't necessary. Puma was with his friends, and he had all eternity to hunt, for streams never dried up, and beaver and fox were plentiful, and where there was always someone to listen to his tall tales of the ways of the mountain men. Smoke stood, cradling Puma in his arms like a baby. He faced the others with tears running down his cheeks.
I'm going to take him home, up into the high lonesome, and bury him. I'll be back at the ranch tomorrow.
Lewis put his hand on Smoke's shoulder.
Smoke, if it's all right with you, I'd be honored to go with you and see Puma off. I've ridden with many men in my years out west, but none of them could hold a candle to Puma Buck.
Joey, Cal, Pearly, Monty, and Ben Tolson all stepped forward, nodding their heads, wanting to go too.
I think Puma would consider it an honor if all of you came along to wish him well on his last journey.
They buried Puma that night, next to a high mountain stream near a beaver dam. As Smoke prepared to place the body in the grave, Cal stepped up and handed Smoke Puma's buffalo skin and knife.
I took this out of the last man Puma killed.
I think he would want you to have it, Cal. And Pearly, you take his pistols.
Smoke looked down at the small figure in his arms.
He always thought of you boys as his grandkids. And I know he'd be proud if you'd honor his memory by taking the things that he always kept by his side.
After the grave was filled, Smoke built a campfire and the men sat up until dawn, listening to Smoke tell them about the life of one of the greatest mountain men who ever lived. Singing his song is what Smoke called it, and he paid tribute to a man he held as close in memory as his own father. The next afternoon, Smoke and his friends were gathered around the dining room table.
Joy, when I came up here with you, it was because of a debt I owed you for saving my life. Now it's got real personal. I don't intend for Murdoch or any of his hired thugs to live through the next few days.
Smoke, because of Puma's sacrifice, we got time to get ready.
When do you think they'll hit, Joey?
Now, if they're smart, which I'm not saying they are, there's only two good times to attack a fortified position. One is right at dusk. Man can't hardly see well enough to shoot anything then, eyes playing tricks on him. The other time's around 2-3 in the morning, when a body's deepest asleep.
You're right. However, I'm like you. I don't think Murdoch is smart enough to wait for the right time. He's so pissed off now after our two attacks on his home, I think he'll send those hired guns and outlaws of his here as soon as they can get ready.
Well, it looks to be about 3:30 now. It's a good 2-hour ride from Murdoch's place. I expect they'll be here just before dark, about 5 or so.
Smoke stepped to the window and surveyed the land between his and Murdoch's ranch.
If they come straight here, they'll be coming from the south, and the setting sun will be off to their left, our right. I'll station a group of hands with long guns in that copse of cottonwoods over there, and another with shotguns in that group of boulders about 50 yards south of it. They can dig in and use the trees and rocks for cover, and they'll be firing on Murdoch's men from out of the sun as they ride past.
What about those other little surprises you've planned for those miscreants? Are they all prepared and ready to go?
Smoke glanced at Cal and Pearly, whose job it had been to get the traps and deadfalls ready.
How about it, men?
We're primed and loaded for bear, Smoke.